Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This is 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th chapter. Mother Yashoda binds Lord Krishna. Very beautiful pastime. And Ekada Griya Dashishu Yashoda Nanda Gehini Karmantara Niyuktasu Nirmamanta Swayam Dadi. That's too much for you? Yani Yaniha Gitani Tad bhala charitani cha dadi nirmantane kale smaranti tan yagayata. One day, Yashoda Ma saw that all the maidservants, grihadasis, all the maidservants were engaged in their household affairs. Consequently, Mother Yashoda personally began to churn the yogurt. While churning the yogurt, she remembered the childish activities of Krishna. Balacharitani cha. Gitani balacharitani. She, Gitani, sang the Charitani characteristics and actions or activities of her Bal Krishna, Bal Gopal. And in her own way, she composed songs and enjoyed singing to herself about those activities in her own way, so she didn't sing the songs of famous poets of the time, but she composed her own songs. Giridhari Sham Hari Marari Shama Pyari Govardhana Dari Govinda Gopal Shila Ralila Priya Priyatam Shishama Sham Kishore Kishore Radha Murali Dar Radhika Hari Radha Damodar Radha Pramod, Jaya Radha Vinod, Radha Raman, Radha Madan Mohan, Giridhari Sham Hari Morari, Sham Apyari, Govardhana Dari. This incident of Krishna's breaking the pot of yogurt and being tied up by Mother Yashoda took place on Deepavali day. So how many Indians today, on the day of Deepavali, even think about Krishna? Nobody. And this is actually the day, the Leela day, when Krishna broke the pot and got tied up by Mother Yashoda, Deepavali. Prabhupada says, this should be the practice of persons eager to remain Krishna conscious 24 hours a day. Very interesting. This incident shows how Krishna conscious Mother Yashoda was. To stay in Krishna consciousness, we should follow such persons. So following means anuga, to follow step by step, to follow someone. And rag means raganuga, to follow the rag of the ragatmika janas, the eternal residents of Vrindavan, like Mother Yashoda, if you're interested in Vatsalya Bhav. So Prabhupada is telling, this should be the practice. What is the practice? Yashoda's practice. What was Yashoda's sadhana? Do your seva. Her seva was churning yogurt into butter. And while doing your seva, sing about Krishna, about his leelas, in recognized songs of the acharyas or in songs of your own composition. Once time Krishna and Balaram walking in the woods, at that time they saw, you know, sometimes we've done things like this. But this should, Prabhupada's saying, this should be the practice. This is the, it should be, but it's not. Right? The Prabhupada is writing this purport in chapter 9 of 10th Canto. He wrote up the 13th chapter before he left. He said, this should be the practice, 24 hours a day to engage in some service and sing about the childhood activities of Krishna. And the next verse is quite a long one. Shomam vasa pritukatitate rvati surutanadam pujrasnehasnutakuchayugam jatakampam chasubru rajvakshara rajvakarsha shramam bujachalat kankano kandalecha swinnam vakcham kavara viglan malati nirmamanta. Dressed in a yellow saffron sari, a belt tied about her full hips, Mother Yashoda pulled on a churning rope, laboring considerably, her bangles and earrings moving and vibrating, and her whole body was shaking because of her intense love for her child. Her breasts were wet with milk. Her face with its very beautiful eyebrows was wet with perspiration, and Malati flowers were falling from Yashoda's hair. A very interesting purport, which we often mention. It's in, maybe in Art of Chanting also. Anyone who desires to be Krishna consciousness in motherly affection or parental affection, which means he's interested in Astai Rati, Avatsalya Rati, and somehow he's developed an attraction to follow a resident of Vrindavan like Yashoda and Nanda. So if he wants to be Krishna conscious in Vatsalya Rati, then what should you do? You should contemplate the bodily features of Mother Yashoda. Should not desire to become Mother Yashoda, this is Mayavad, but either in parental affection or conjugal love, friendship or servitorship. And anyway, we must follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, not try to become like them. Therefore, this description is provided here. Advanced devotees must cherish this description. Always thinking of Mother Yashoda's features, how she was dressed, how she was working and perspiring, how beautifully the flowers were arranged in her hair, and so on. One should take advantage of the full description provided here by thinking of Mother Yashoda in maternal affection for Krishna. So, of course, this same line of thinking or line of sadhana could be done in Madhurya Bhav and Kinkari Bhav, Bhavalas Rati of the Mandaris, Pransakis of Radha. They could also take some description of Radharani, Radharani's getting dressed, or what Radharani's form and what she appears like when she's splashing water on Krishna. And one could think very deeply about that. And this would be a sadhana, which would be very helpful to develop attachment to Radharani and to the mantris and sakis, meditating on their forms, their qualities, their pastimes. This is the sum and substance of Raghunuga Bhakti, and Prabhupada is mentioning right here in 10th Canto, chapter 9, verse 3, purport. This is the thing to do. Tamstanya kama asadya matnatin janinim hari grihitva dadi mantanam Nyashe dat pritimavhan. While Mother Yashoda was churning butter, Krishna desired to drink the milk of her breast. He came before her. And he, to increase her transcendental pleasure, he caught hold of the churning rod and began to prevent her from churning. Mata, I am hungry. Mother Yashoda embraced Krishna, allowed him to sit on her lap, and she looked upon the face of the Lord with great love and affection. Because of her intense affection, milk was flowing from her breasts. But when she saw the milk on the pan, the milk pan on the oven was boiling over, she immediately left her son to take care of the overflowing milk, although the child was not yet fully satisfied with drinking her breast milk. So why did she run? Because the milk was, it's considered a sin if milk boils over on the stove. It's one of the sins, actually. It's not just some boiling water or boiling too much dal. But if milk boils over and comes out and goes on the stove and gets wasted, obviously by that process, it's an aparad. It's actually considered, more than aparad, it's actually sinful. It's not too much appreciated. So she didn't want to do that. It's a grave offense for grihasthas, especially wives. And moreover, the milk went to do service to Krishna also. So the milk was thinking, I gotta stay inside the pot here. So she wanted to help the milk do its service to Krishna. Because the milk is going to serve Krishna in ways which Mother Yashoda cannot. Because Mother Yashoda can give milk, but she can't give burfi. So she wants to, she's running there for Krishna's service. She's leaving Krishna to serve Krishna. She's leaving her service to Krishna to serve Krishna. Very interesting. At the time of milking, when the coward man unties the calf, which he keeps nearby to entice the mother to let down her milk, the calf runs and he butts his mother forcefully and sucks her teats, totally absorbed, relishing the taste. Krishna drank Mother Yashoda's milk like this when he was hungry. Yet Mother Yashoda dropped him on the ground and ran to protect the milk on the stove. It looks like a simple act, but there's a deep philosophical point behind it. Why did Mother Yashoda drop baby Krishna when Krishna was happily drinking her breast milk? Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. And people perform many difficult austerities just to get a glimpse of Krishna's lotus feet. And here Mother Yashoda has Krishna on her lap, sucking her breasts. And she just dropped him. She just drops him to save 3 liters of milk. Amazing. Such an insignificant thing. 3 liters of milk and she's dropping God, Krishna. How is it possible? At that time, Yashoda had 9 lakhs of cows. So what's the big deal if 3 liters of milk boil over on the stove? She can certainly have enough milk to replace it. Mother Yashoda is doing direct service to Krishna. And that's described. This is Uttama Bhakti, Anukulyena Krishnanu. But she stopped this activity to protect the milk. Why? Krishna is the Poshya, the one who is to be fed, nourished, and the milk is the object which is to be fed to him. If the milk gets destroyed by boiling over, what is going to feed Krishna? Just as Krishna is important, the objects used in Krishna's seva are also important. If that object is in danger of being destroyed, it is more important than Krishna. Therefore, Mother Yashoda can leave Krishna and go protect his milk. Again, she can return to feed milk to Krishna. No harm. But if the milk on the stove is lost, then it's lost as it's lost. So as Mother Yashoda gave more importance to the milk than Krishna, although Krishna is the person to be nourished, and milk was the nourisher. Similarly, in Rag Bhakti, the main activity, the heart of Rag Bhakti, is Smaranam. Smaranam is like the object to be nourished, because that is what we want. But other activities like observing Ekadasi, Bhishma Panchaka, wearing tilak, honoring cows, that nourishes the smaranam. By performing these auxiliary acts, your remembrance of Krishna gets nourished. If we neglect these activities, we will not be able to remember Krishna, as the activities of smaran itself is most important. It's also important in Rag Bhakti that you do those activities which help you to remember Krishna. Jai Ho. So that's the idea. Just to save the milk, because it's also important for serving Krishna. As Mother Yashoda gave more importance to the objects which were to be used in the Seva Krishna, in the same way, auxiliary acts which help one remember Krishna, like hearing and chanting his glories, are more important. Supporting activities are more important than the activity being supported by them. Huh. That's interesting. So the activities, the supporting activities are hearing and chanting, and the support of them is Krishna, the object of doing it. But those activities are more important than Krishna. That's what Mother Yashoda is saying. Listen, the milk is more important than you. Interesting. Being angry and biting his lips with his teeth, Krishna, with false tears in his eyes, broke the yogurt pot with a stone. He entered the room and began to eat the freshly churned butter in a solitary place. Mother Yashoda took the hot milk from the oven, returned to the churning spot, and she saw the mudka was broken and Krishna was not present. And she concluded that Krishna had broken a pot of yogurt. Wouldn't you know it? What was Krishna doing? He was sitting upside down on a wooden mortar, and he was distributing milk preparations like yogurt and butter to the monkeys, as he liked. Mother Yashoda, seeing Krishna, very cautiously approached him from behind. It was a sneak attack. He didn't know she was coming. However, when Krishna saw Mother Yashoda with a stick in her hand, he very quickly got down from the top of the mortar and ran away, very much afraid. Yogis try to capture him as a Paramatma meditation. Desiring to enter in the effulgence of the Lord, great austerities and penances, they fail to reach the goal. But Mother Yashoda, thinking that the Supreme Personality of Krishna was her son, began following Krishna to catch him. While following Krishna, Mother Yashoda, her thin waist, overburdened by her heavy breast, naturally had to reduce her speed. Because of following Krishna very swiftly, her hair became loose, flowers in her hair were falling behind her, and yet she did not fail to capture her son, Krishna. Krishna, when he was caught, he became very afraid, and he admitted to being an offender. "Yes, I broke your pot." As Yashoda looked upon Krishna, she saw that Gopal was crying, and his tears were mixed with kajal, and he rubbed his eyes. He smeared the ointment all over his face. Mother Yashoda, catching her beautiful son by the hand, mildly began to chastise him. "Haribo! Haribo!" Mother Yashoda was being overwhelmed by intense love for Krishna, not knowing who Krishna was or how powerful he was. Because of maternal affection for Krishna, she never even cared to know who he was. When she saw that her son had become excessively afraid, she threw the stick away and desired to tie him up so he would not commit any further naughty activities. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has no beginning or end. No exterior or interior. There is no front or rear. He's all-pervading, not under influence of time element. There's no difference for him, past, present, and future. He exists in his own transcendental form at all times. Being absolute beyond relativity, he is free from the distinctions between cause and effect. Although Krishna is the cause and effect of everything, that unmanifested person who is beyond the perception of the senses has now appeared as a human child. And Mother Yashoda, considering Krishna her own ordinary child, bound him to the wooden mortar with a rope. When Yashoda was trying to bind the offending child, she saw that the binding rope was short by a distance width of 2 fingers, and thus she brought another rope to tie it to that one. The new rope was also short by the measurement of 2 fingers. Another rope was joined, it was also short by 2 fingers. As many ropes as she tied together, all of them failed. Mother Yashoda joined all the ropes available in the household, but she failed to bind Krishna. All the elderly gopis in the neighborhood were smiling at the fun. Mother Yashoda was laboring heavily, but she was also smiling. Everyone was struck with wonder. Jai Ho, Nitai Gaur. Because Mother Yashoda's hard labor, her body became wet with perspiration. Flowers and comb in her hair were falling. Child saw his mother. Child Krishna saw his mother so fatigued. He became merciful and allowed her to bind him. Oh, Prakshet, this entire universe with its great exalted demigods like Shiv, Brahma, Indra, is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Yet, the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute. He comes under the control of his devotees. This was exhibited in Krishna by Krishna this pastime. Brityavashyata. Nitaigor. Haribo. Ah, neither Brahma nor Shiva nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from Krishna the deliverer from the mature world mercy that he received from Mother Yashoda. Hare Krishna. Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service. He's not easily accessible to mental speculators, those striving for self-realization by severe austerities, penances, and those who consider the body the same as the self. You're not the body. Yes. By following in the footsteps of devotees who are in direct relationship with Krishna, especially the inhabitants of Vrindavan, one can reach a supreme position of associating with Krishna. Vrindavanam pratyajya paramekam nagacchati. Krishna does not leave Vrindavan even for a moment. The Vrindavan Vasis, Yashoda, and Krishna's friends and conjugal lovers, younger gopis with whom he dances, have very intimate relationships with Krishna. Very nice. While Mother Yashoda was very busy with household affairs, the Supreme Lord Krishna observed twin trees known as Yamala Arjuna, which in a former millennium had been demigod sons of Kubera. In their former birth, these two sons, Nala Kubera and Manigriva, were extremely opulent and fortunate, but because of false prestige and pride, they did not care about anyone, and thus Narada Muni cursed them to become trees. The following episode occurred one day during Krishna's transcendental pastimes in Gokul. Though any number of maidservants could have done this chore, Yashoda tactfully engaged them elsewhere in order to show her expertise in preparing butter. With her own hands, which appeared as soft and elegant as lotus flowers, Yashoda personally churned butter for her beloved boy. It's a very sweet rendition, isn't it? Her hands were as soft and elegant as lotus flowers. She personally churned butter for her beautiful, for her beloved boy. Ba ba ba. The beauty of her delicate arms put lotus stems to shame, As she rhythmically pulled the ropes back and forth, the jingling of her emerald-studded bangles resounded like the bells on the feet of a dancer. As Yashoda's hair loosened and became wet from the exertion of churning, it looked like the open tail feathers of a jubilant peacock. It's a lot of hair. When her hair braid untied, the jewels, flowers, and peacock feathers decorating it fell on the ground. She's a village girl. She's a gopi. They wander in the village, in the pasturing grounds, and walk through the fields, farming place. And so there's so many peacock feathers lying there and Gunjamala, and she's decorating, she's picking those up and putting in her hair just like her son. As shooting stars beautify the dense darkness of night, these items falling from Yashoda's hair increase the beauty of the earth. And what were those items? Jewels were falling from her hair. Flowers and peacock feathers. They appeared like shooting stars because her hair is like dark night and the shimmering jewels and peacock feathers and flowers, like white malati flowers, look like white stars shooting out of the darkness. The sound of falling flowers. The necklace on Yashoda's raised breast swung back and forth with the movements of her blouse. The shining effulgence emanating from her jeweled earrings appeared like a constant flow of nectar, bathed in the sweet mellow of maternal affection. Yashoda's neck and shoulders looked exceedingly beautiful. The ornamental belt surrounding her highly raised hips appeared captivating. The radiant gems and tinkling bells on that belt further increased its elegance. Drenched in a river of devotional perspiration, Yashoda's delicate body looked delightful. The sweetness of the scene defeated the beauty of seeing a swarm of intoxicated bees buzzing over a blooming lotus flower. The loud sound resembling the roaring of the ocean rose out of the wide mouth of Yashoda's butter pot. The drops of yogurt spilling out of the pot and falling on the golden border of Yashoda's sari made it look even more attractive. As Yashoda passed the time remembering Krishna, she recalled the enchanting look in her son's eyes whenever he got caught stealing butter. At that time, he would proudly say, "Mother, you should know I am expert in this art of stealing." Of course, he got caught. Krishna felt hungry and anxious to drink Yashoda's breast milk. In a threatening voice, Krishna said, "Either you stop to feed me, or I will break the churning pot." Suddenly, the one who churns the hearts of everyone in creation forcefully caught the churning rod. Yashoda stopped, sat Krishna on her lap, and happily fed him, while gazing at his loosely hanging curly dark blue hair. Yashoda's heart swelled with appreciation of Krishna's wonderfully gentle nature. Just at that time in the kitchen, some boiling milk foamed up in a pot. Fearing it might spill over, Yashoda left her son and ran to the kitchen. This deeply pierced the core of Krishna's heart. Becoming angry, he picked up a rock and broke the butter pot. churned butter flowed in all directions across the floor. Beautiful scenery. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. If anyone's conscious, they can understand. If you're unconscious, you can dream about it. In a fearful yet playful mood, Krishna ran through the butter and romped from room to room, engaging in more mischief. Stealthily entering the milk storeroom, Krishna quickly ate small amounts of freshly churned butter from various pots. From relishing his favorite food, he soon felt satisfied and gave up his anger. From relishing his favorite food, he soon felt. Then Sri Hari, who was worshipped by all the demigods, snatched a pot of butter and ran into the courtyard. The pastimes Krishna enjoyed at this time appear to be classic performances on a dramatic stage. While standing on a grinding mortar in the courtyard and anxiously looking around for Mother Yashoda, Krishna fed fresh butter to all the assembled children and monkeys. The fortunate Yashoda, whose jewel-like son benedicts the entire creation, took the boiling milk off the stove and returned to Krishna. The fame of attaining Krishna as her son enhanced the brilliant beauty of Yashoda's body. She wanted to embrace her son and console him, but not finding him there, she became morose, in a mood of lamentation. Yashoda frantically searched everywhere for Krishna. She found some broken pots, emitting innumerable streams of yogurt that flowed across the floor, making it slippery and white in color. Out of anger, Krishna had smashed many clay pots, which now lay strewn on the floor in hundreds of pieces. Mother Yashoda thought, "Alas, what has happened? Why is this yogurt pot broken?" At first she could not understand, but upon seeing a small rock, she concluded that Krishna had perpetrated this naughty act. With a look of surprise, Mother Yashoda touched the tip of her nose with the tip of her index finger. And thought, "How could my child show such impudence? I tried patiently to train him properly. So how could he behave so horribly?" Although no impurities resided in her heart, Yashoda appeared to manifest a special form of motherly pride. Showing false anger, she thought, "The glories of my son's transcendental pastimes are unlimited. His every action increases his own pride and pleasure, while simultaneously creating a festival for one and all. My son derives boundless happiness by his constant pastimes of stealing." She's proud of the muck and chore. She's proud to have such a thief as her son. As soon as Krishna, who enchants the demigods with his beautiful body, the color of a monsoon cloud, saw Yashoda coming out of the house, he jumped up in fear and ran away as fast as possible. Expertly understanding the human-like nature of her son, Yashoda chased after him, calling, "Stop running, stop! You, oh foremost cheater in the world!" Krishna kept looking fearfully back over his shoulder while running away from Yashoda. Though Yashoda felt fatigued and mentally distressed, Her body, arms, and legs looked very beautiful as she pursued her mischievous son. Full of pride and anger, Yashoda continued shouting to Krishna, "Stop, you thief and liar! How could you carry on like this? Where are you going? Just stop running and stay where you are." Krishna said, "I will stop if you drop your stick." After saying this, Krishna stopped running away, but kept a safe distance from his mother. Yashoda said, "If you are so afraid of being punished, then why did you break my yogurt pot today?" Krishna said,
"I will never do it again. Just drop the stick from your hand."
Yashoda's mind turned into an abode of amazement as she tried to approach her son. But seeing her angry mood, Krishna quickly ran away again while speaking in a distressed tone. "Mother, please drop that big stick and don't punish me. Oh, sinless one, if you do this, I will come back to you." After hearing Krishna's innocent appeal, Mother Yashoda dropped the stick. Seeing this, Krishna stopped running. Haribo! Absorbed in watching Krishna's transcendental pastimes, the immortal denizens of heaven felt totally amazed. One can easily understand how powerful demigods like Brahma, who lives for trillions of years, became upset and bewildered upon seeing Krishna's pastimes of showing fear before his mother. They could not fathom how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is feared by fear personified, ran away in fear of a stick in his mother's hand. The fine hairs curling over Yashoda's face dripped with perspiration, and her blouse moved from her heavy breathing. Her hair hung loose from running, and her lotus face appeared exhausted. When she caught Krishna's hand, he said, "Mother, please don't beat me." While saying this, Krishna rubbed his tear-filled eyes with his delicate palms, which resembled the petals of a fresh lotus flower. With a choked voice, Krishna slowly uttered some sweet yet indistinct words that came out from his beautiful mouth like drops of nectar falling from the full moon. Indeed, it was a marvelous sight to see Krishna becoming overwhelmed in fear and crying helplessly. Yashoda thought, "If I do not bind him immediately, he will run away into the deep forest." Yashoda then brought a grinding mortar and considered how to bind the one of boundless glories. Observing this, Krishna beamed an attractive smile. Yashoda ordered some maidservants, Kurangavati and Lavangavati, fetch some smooth, soft rope made of jute. Has to be soft. The attempt of Brijeshwari Yashoda to bind Krishna, the ever-well-wisher of the whole creation, immersed her in an ocean of joy. Soon, many opulently dressed elderly gopis, the embodiments of limitless motherly affection, came there, along with several curious boys with clean, beautiful, curly hair. Mother Yashoda tied many ropes together, but they were always measured 2 inches too short. Surprisingly, no matter how many ropes she collected, they remained 2 inches too short. She said, "Alas, this small distance seems to become as vast as Brahma's universe. The Supreme Lord enacts this pastime by his personal energy to display his unlimited power." Observing this wonderful incident, the elderly gopis try to relieve Yashoda's anxiety by saying, "Oh Yashoda, you're the most blessed one in creation. A minute ago you tied a small golden belt around Krishna's thin waist, but now you cannot bind him with all the ropes in your house. Despite the number of ropes you tie together, they always end up 2 inches too short. There is some strange cause behind this phenomenon. So you better stop trying to bind your son." In great astonishment, Yashoda addressed the gopis. "Oh, Braja gopis, I have no more ropes. So please bring all the ropes stored in your houses." It was not out of fear that the gopis gave all the ropes to Yashoda, but they did so in order to see Krishna's glorious transcendental character and to relish his blissful pastimes. Feigning anger, Mother Yashoda took all the additional ropes and tried again to bind her naughty son. While enjoying this scene, the doe-eyed housewives of Vrindavan laughed quietly while secretly tasting a special joy in their hearts. All the blissful moods of spiritual love harmonized in Krishna's childhood pastimes. Nice sentence. All the blissful moods of spiritual life harmonized in Krishna's childhood pastimes. Though Krishna's hands were very delicate, his eyes soon pained from continually rubbing the tears falling from them. His eyes were paining from continually rubbing the tears falling from them. In a choked up voice, Krishna spoke some richly sweet words that captivated the minds of all. Finally, Krishna cried in a gentle, honey-sweet voice. A gentle, honey-sweet voice. Now that's quite a voice. Gentle, honey-sweet voice. Empathizing with Krishna, close friends like Subal also wept along with their bosom friend. That's a beautiful scene. That Krishna's crying. He's crying. Krishna cried in a gentle, honey sweet voice. And his friends are also crying out of empathy for his situation. Yashoda's heart palpitated with her heavy breathing. Her hair loosened and the flowers fell to the ground. Perspiring, tired, overwhelmed, and her labors frustrated, Yashoda sat down to rest and figure out how to tie up Krishna. A short time later, she tried again to bind her matchless son. The elderly gopis, having lost all desire to return to their homes, stood motionless while staring at Krishna with unblinking eyes. Now all the ropes in Vrindavan joined in a fruitless attempt to bind the master of the universe. Every single rope in Vrindavan. It is impossible to tie up bliss, wisdom, power, and consciousness. So how can anyone tie up Krishna, who is made of nothing but bliss, wisdom, power, and consciousness? It's a nice combination. Bliss, wisdom, power, and consciousness. How could Yashoda bind one who has no inside or outside, who is limitless, who has no beginning or end, who has infinite power, who is the totality of everything, who is completely full and beyond any contamination, and who is within and outside of everything? Viewing the situation, the all-powerful Supreme Lord decided to bestow his mercy upon Yashoda and everyone in the room. Daigor. Even though Mother Yashoda eagerly desired to tie up Krishna, she met no success despite her total exhaustion. The endeavor of a devotee to bind the Lord can only be successful with the Lord's sanction. All of Yashoda's work now bore fruit because Krishna, out of compassion for her, suddenly allowed himself to be bound. Extending his mercy, Krishna saved his beloved mother from further anger and frustration. Yashoda asked the assembled coward boys to watch Krishna to prevent him from untying himself and running away. Then Yashoda and the elderly gopis entered her private chambers. The moment Yashoda left, Krishna stopped crying and his face assumed a peaceful and effulgent glow like the luminous moonshine. He was all an act. He was faking it. Krishna thought how to use his present bondage to fulfill a prophecy of Narada Muni, the prophecy. Previously, Narada had cursed two intoxicated and indecent demigods named Nalakuvera and Manigriva to become trees. Deciding to bestow his mercy upon them, Krishna dragged the grinding mortar tied to his belly along the ground toward those two trees. Krishna's playmates cheerfully followed him. From a distance, Krishna saw that the two trees were connected at the root. Similarly, a student will understand that Prakriti and Purusha originate from one source. As Karmakanda and Gyanakanda are separate paths, the two trees had different trunks. The Samaveda and Yajurvedas have various divisions. And similarly, the two trees had many branches. As a great king has the qualities of valor and achievement, as a mountain range possesses steadiness, and as a cluster of clouds is laden with showers, these two trees displayed an abundance of natural opulence. The demigods embodied in these two trees had become purified by suffering for many years as trees. Just as clouds abound in the rainy season, and the water becomes clear and pure in the autumn. As the universe is vast and broad, and these trees stood stout and strong. They were a pair of Arjuna trees. They reminded everyone of the great heroes, Arjuna and Kartavirya. Like Nakula and Sahadeva, these two trees were twins. Seeing Krishna moving towards the huge trees, Krishna's friend said, "Perhaps Krishna cannot tolerate the scorching sunshine, so he is seeking shelter under those two trees." Shady trees. While Krishna's friend spoke like this, Krishna pulled the mortar over and got it stuck between the two trees. He who annihilates all pretenders appeared splendid with his curly hair hanging loosely over his shoulders. Though Krishna's body is pure and spotless, his character is colored with wonderful varieties of ras. Very nice. With a slight jerk of the mortar, Krishna easily uprooted those huge trees in a moment. A loud cracking sound filled the air. When a tree split open, as a person pokes a hole in a clay pot, that unique vibration, which conquered all other sounds, raced through the sky to puncture a hole in the coverings of the universe. Now that's a loud sound. That crack cracked the universe. The sound exactly resembled the terrible noise produced by the fierce thunderbolts crashing at the time of devastation. Krishna, however, remained calm and joyful amidst the tremendous tumult. Krishna is eternally free, but he appeared to be bound to a grinding mortar. His character is eternally pure, but it was stained by his pastimes of stealing. Although Krishna can liberate anyone trapped in material existence, he was bound by the loving affection of his mother.